welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. This is your host, Christopher Page. Once again, in studio with me, Matt Flynn. Welcome back, Matt.
Hello, hello.
We had a great time talking about our favorite movies and then a couple of our favorite movies. Yeah. We're moving from the larger screen down to the smaller screen today. I wanted to kind of – we've danced around this subject. Every time we seem to have a discussion, we start talking about TV and television shows and how it's changed, how – it's come, you know, kind of leaving the airwaves, moving over to, you know, online streaming and only. So I figured we need to actually have this discussion since we keep dancing around it. So I think we'll just kind of do this just a general television discussion, not any one particular show or anything, but I'm sure some will come up just within our discussion. One of the things I wanted to talk of right from the start is, and kind of based just so our listeners know, you're probably, I'm going to guess, probably about a decade younger than I am. So you started seeing stuff a little later. You came into some of this electronic stuff or the streaming, the internet stuff maybe earlier than I did, or at a younger age, I should say.
Yeah.
I was curious, did your family have, what it started for me when television first started changing, it was with the VCR. You know, prior to that, it was you had to be, if it was on at 7:30, you had to be in front of the TV at 7:30, and that's when you watched it. That's when the family watched it, because that's the only way. There wasn't, you know, people didn't have, well, some people had more than one TV in the house, and if it was all airwaves, it was, you know, 9, 5, 12, a few channels or whatever. But the VCR is really what changed everything. Did your family have the VCR, or did you guys pretty much go straight to the DVR?
No, we had a VCR. I remember that. Just go out, rent something, and then just play it over and over and over.
Right, right.
There was always this running joke when I was real young, and I'm talking like 3 or 4. Oh, Matt's watching The Gnomobile again, and it was something that we got out of the video store. Apparently, that was a movie I absolutely loved.
The Gnomobile?
The Gnomobile.
Gnomobile.
Yeah, I don't know if it was made by Disney. I just know that the boy and the girl who were in Mary Poppins were in that movie.
Interesting.
And
okay.
They meet, like, this whole village of gnomes, and I can't really remember more beyond that. Apparently, I watched it like 200 times, and I have no memory of it because I was 3.
To come, I can guarantee a dozen grandchildren at your knee.
And every one of them proud to claim a Rudy is me middle name.
In the Gnomobile, the Gnomobile, we're rolling along in the Gnomobile. Oh, what a wonderful way to feel.
That's what I would watch over and over and over and over again. Don't know why my parents never bought the movie.
Well, it may have been like $100 or something there, yeah.
You forget that. But, I always remember we always had a VCR, and there was always like 2 TVs. The one downstairs had some cable channels, but that was like the VCR TV, mm-hmm. And then the one upstairs was the cable TV.
Did it change how your family watched TV? Like I said, it used to, prior to the VCR, the show was on at 8 o'clock, then that's when you had to watch the show. Did that change in your family when you got the VCR? Did you guys do the, that's the beginning of time shifting. Did you guys do that?
I always remember just sort of kind of watching things like in syndication. I was never, even growing up, I was never catch the original broadcast. Like I really, you know, growing up in grade school and high school, getting really into Friends, but very rarely would watch the original broadcast because that's when things really got big with syndication. It's like, mm-hmm. Why would I run to the TV and watch it at this one time when I can watch 4 episodes in a row on TBS right, or the okay. WB or whatever you want, mm-hmm. Things like that. So I kind of always skipped watching it when it airs, because I was never into, like, The Simpsons. I never got into, you know, The X-Files. Not until later, until I could watch 5 episodes in a row. I think I inadvertently created binge watching by myself.
Right. A lot of it, and it was kind of funny with the VCR in my family. Well, for one thing, the family wasn't huge on like the family watch stuff. It was more of, well, only in the fact that if my dad wanted to watch something, then that's what we watched, because we didn't really, for the longest time, we only had the TV in the house. And so if that was a show he wanted to watch, if you wanted to watch TV, you watched it too. So I grew up watching things like Cheers and Night Court and Family Ties. Friends and stuff didn't come till later down the road. But for me, yeah, it was Cheers and Night Court and that sort of stuff. And then I don't remember any dramas or anything. I think it was mostly comedies. But the VCR came into play for us. It was more of a, maybe more of a thing where if it was on too late, like I was a big, I ended up getting really into Doctor Who. We're here in Cincinnati. The only way to watch Doctor Who was at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night on PBS. Well, I wasn't home at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, or I was just coming home or whatever. So that was where the VCR would come into play, and I'd record whatever Doctor Who they showed the night prior. And then I'd watch it, Sunday morning or something like that. So it's kind of funny. There wasn't a whole lot of, oh, I wanted to watch this, let's record it. Very rarely. It was only if we were out of the house. If we weren't going to be home for some reason, that's when we record the show and then watch it the next day sometime, or watch it on the weekend. Because we actually didn't even really have cable until much later too. So we didn't even have the choices that many people had. I had a rough childhood.
Darn. Well, it's interesting that you mention, only being able to watch like things that your dad would watch. I guess I'd never even thought of this until now. Because my dad, he didn't watch like television shows. He'd watch the weather, the news, or a sport game, baseball or basketball or whatever
right. He
was on that night. And maybe that's why we had the VCR downstairs. It's like, dad's watching something boring. I'm 6 and want to see a cartoon. So another TV was set up with a VCR attached to it. And maybe that's how I never got into watching, things as they aired. It's like, no. I want to watch what I want to watch now over and over and over again.
So you never – that was a question I was going to ask, is what was the earliest show that you remembered really getting into? But from what it sounds like, it was – a lot of stuff came later, and then only when you could binge it, when you could do the marathons, or the rentals were already coming around. And so some of the stuff you could get on DVD and you'd watch a whole season or something. Or you did the binge watching. You didn't really get a kind of addicted or tied into one show as it was airing almost – at all.
Right. Not as a kid. It was more of Saturday morning cartoons, which again was the same things over and over and over
again. Yeah.
And as I was growing up, that's when like Nickelodeon became big, and but they would show their stuff every day.
Right.
It wouldn't be, hey, tune in, Wednesday night for the new episode. It's like, no, we're going to show you an episode of Rugrats, then Doug, then Rocco, then Rugrats, then Doug, then Rocco. And then Ren and Stimpy came on a little later, and then that's when my mom would be like, should you be watching this? It's a cartoon. It's okay.
You're right. Yeah, that's a whole other discussion there, is the how animated shows quit being for kids.
Yeah.
Well, from the VCR, I guess the next big jump was the DVR, which was – It was, DVR to the nth degree, as now instead of where VCRs, and that's what's funny. There's probably an entire generation out here that don't understand that you could only record at most 8 hours of programming, I think, at any given time.
Yeah.
And then you had to switch out the tape, or you lost it, or yeah. And
or you had to make the sacrifice of, am I going to tape over this?
Yeah.
The other thing. And you really had to it's like, oh, no, it's Sophie's Choice. What do I keep?
Yep. So the DVR came along, and now you could have, I don't remember what the earliest DVRs, how much space that they had, but I'm going to guess you could record up to 20, 30, 40, 50 hours of programming easily. And sometimes on some of them, you could do it on two channels at once, on the earlier ones. And now you can record, I think some of the new ones, you can record multiple channels at the same time. You literally miss nothing anymore if you can find time to watch everything.
Right.
When was the first DVR. Did you ever go to the DVR, or did you skip it?
No, we skipped that, and I'm not even sure why. I guess just because, again, in my house, it wasn't you ran to watch something as it aired. You just you watched it, or you know, or just you know, it'll be in syndication. Don't worry about it. And that was around the time, at least in my house, that I remember, like, things were getting big on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could go rent it. And we were still very much a rental kind of family of, hey, just wait till next year and you'll just run out and get it on DVD or you
right.
get the box set. Things like that.
Yeah, I went from VCRs to DVD players, like you were saying. I worked at a video store at the Blockbuster. I worked there for a while, which is great. Free rentals. Watched a lot of stuff that way. And I didn't get the DVR until after my wife and I moved in together and got cable. And that was the first time I had cable in the house in 20 years, probably. And that was pretty eye-opening. And then it came with, like, the TiVo, which was, like, the Cadillac of DVRs at the time.
Yeah.
And it would make – it was just like, hey, we noticed you record this. Well, we suggest – you might like this. And I'd be like, yes, I would.
Whoever came up with that algorithm was brilliant.
Oh, it was. The stuff it would come up with, I've never heard of that. I'd be glad to check that out. You know, it was insane. I watched a lot of TV with that TiVo. We burned it out. I think it died. The poor thing died. Now, the DVD was where I went for movies. It wasn't anywhere where I went for television shows. And I don't think that even TV shows didn't really seem to come into the DVD market until later.
Yeah, no, it wasn't at first. Movies. But when they did, I feel like once they started, everybody put their show out on DVD.
Right.
And that's what I remember buying a lot of first. It's like, hey, I don't have to – because I got favorite episodes that I want to see. And now I can skip to them and I can watch them over and over again. And I don't have to wait for that to be the one that comes on. And hey, guess what? No commercials. A TV show? No commercials? That's pretty good.
I wonder if it was something like Netflix when they first came out, which was the through the mail DVD. You know, you put things in what you wanted on a list, and then as it came available, they'd send it to you on DVD. And I wonder if the television on DVD, I wonder if it's kind of Netflix had something to do with that. People started saying, well, I'd kind of want to watch this TV show that was on back in this day, or I didn't see this first season. I wonder if Netflix had anything to do with kind of bringing that to you know, getting studios to put their shows to DVD.
I think it's kind of a combination. I think TiVo also played a role in that, and the DVR played a role in that, because you'd record your show, then you'd go back and watch it, and then they started saying, and then you could fast forward the commercials.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of people are like, really?
Yeah.
So I can watch this whole show and just get past all of the stuff I don't want to see. And that was a huge change, and it was part of the progression of where TV is now.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna stream it, and you're gonna have no commercials.
Yeah, I find watching a show now live with commercials excruciating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, God, is this still on? Yeah, it's terrible. I cannot watch stuff without being able to fast forward through the commercials or have them completely excised, entirely. It's painful to sit and watch something with commercials because, first of all, the commercials are so ridiculously stupid. But then it's like, I just want to watch the show.
Right. I mean, and for me, if I'm catching something that – because I don't have any cable whatsoever now, so I'm just – for me, it's all streaming services. So if I'm watching something now and I'm going to catch it the day after it aired on whatever network's app – and they have commercials, I'll turn the show on, click straight to the commercials, mute it, go to my phone, and then just wait for the commercials to end, click to the next set of commercials, and then I just play them all, and I rewind the episode all the way back to the beginning, and then I can watch it commercial-free.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I spend 15 minutes on my phone waiting for the commercials to end, and get, you know, 45 minutes, 42
there are,
minutes.
There are workarounds.
There are workarounds. I mean, it still takes time, but I don't have to watch it.
Right. Oh, yeah. So same amount of time, right. But less aggravation.
Exactly.
So you got the streaming services. We still do the cable, or, well, the satellite. Mainly because I think I could cut the cord a lot easier than my wife. My wife still has a lot of shows where she feels she maybe not are going to be as easily streamable or findable on some app or something like that. Where most of my stuff, it'd be, yeah, it's definitely out there. If I got a Netflix or a Hulu account, I could watch everything that I wanted to watch. And if not, it's, I can get the DVDs from somewhere. It'd be really easy. Now, what's interesting is with the streaming services, as they became more and more popular and able to do it, you know, the internet speeds, of course, had to be at a level that you could do something like this. Believe it or not, folks, there was a time when, you know, you had to dial in to get to your internet, and you were lucky to get a, you know, a couple megs of a minute kind of thing.
Yeah.
You couldn't do this streaming. And so it was an industry that had to sort of wait for the technology, and probably in its own way kind of helped push that technology. And so now what they've done is not only are they providing us with movies that we might want to watch, so we don't have to go to the rental stores anymore, which has, you know, brought about the death of the rental store, yeah, store effectively. There's still a few hanging on here and there. There's actually a Family Video around the corner from here, believe it or not, that's still hanging on. Yeah. It killed like the chain Blockbuster. I mean, that was no one, certainly Blockbuster, didn't expect to see it.
Which, it's funny you bring it up, because just last night I discovered this hilarious Twitter account called @LoneBlockbuster. And it's an account that claims they are the last opened Blockbuster.
Wow.
The stuff they're tweeting is just so funny.
I wonder if that's true, because there were still a few franchise Blockbusters.
Right.
There was a lot of franchise store or individual stores that Blockbuster went and took in, you bought, but would give like franchises. And then eventually they went through and bought up a lot of the franchises, so they're just one corporation. But there was still a few franchises, and I wonder if there is still like a franchise hanging on with the Blockbuster name.
Yeah, they're not saying where they are, which makes me think it's just a fun parody. But the things they're tweeting are, I'm just going like, one hand it's a joke, but on the other hand, that's very true. Like, one said, hey, get 3 rentals and we'll give you the sour straws free.
Wow.
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember getting either the tub of popcorn or the, right, with the 2 rentals or...
Right, 2 rentals and a popcorn free and stuff like that.
Blockbuster rewards where you could earn the free rentals, right, and stuff. Oh my gosh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, I did work there. I worked there for a number of years, and it was actually a lot of fun. I mean, it was a great place to work. You, sure. The same people would come to your store every week, and you got to know them, and you got to be friends with some of these customers, and you could recommend stuff, and they'd recommend stuff, and you'd like, oh, hey, I held on to this. You know, you'd be the friendly one, and you, right, you hold on to the must-see, the movie that everybody wants. You'd kind of keep that one stuck under the... But I can say that now that it's that they're all closed, because that wasn't something we were supposed to do. It was a lot of fun, and it's a shame that sort of trying to think of the right word, that environment's gone. You know, that, yeah, there isn't the sort of everyone get together at the Blockbuster sort of thing. You know, first it was the video arcade, and then it was the video store. But now it's Facebook and Twitter. Right.
But you're also kind of seeing like retro things come back a little bit. You know, like I feel the record store is still a very prominent,
sure,
thing, and now you've got you know, like the bar arcades kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
I wouldn't doubt if somebody's like, let's make the bar video store.
Yeah, well,
you know, you're older, you want a drink, but you want your VHS too, don't you?
That's not, there you go. You mix alcohol into the mix, and then you've definitely got
it. Like, hold on, we have to rewind. No one cares. They're plastered.
Well, now the streaming services are here. They started just supplying what already existed, movies and then some television shows. Well, now they've taken that next step. And now I think Amazon's done it. Netflix has done it. Hulu has done it. They have original programming.
Yeah.
This is a big step, and this is something that I think if any network or studio was concerned about their grip on the market slipping, streaming services with their own original content, I think is going to be it. I mean, this is the every cable channel and every whatever is always worried about that new startup, I guess, that comes in and says, oh, we're the, you know, Joe Schmo channel and we're going to show this. And they all, I'm sure they watch and see how they do. And, you know, some are, some work, some don't. But this is, I think, a little bit different because this isn't something that, well, it doesn't matter because they're only going to show up on that particular cable subscriber. Well, no, this is something that you can get in your home. All you got to do is pin 10, 15 bucks a month to get that streaming service.
Right.
It's a big difference, I think.
It's huge. And I think to take it one step back, I think that whole thing with like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon doing original programming, I think you can trace that back to HBO. Because HBO always advertised itself as, we're not TV. We're HBO. It was like they're a TV network that operated like a movie studio.
Sure, okay.
And, you know, they used to just show movies. Just like, hey, you know, we're the movie channel, and it's without commercials, and they're not censored. It's the original theatrical broadcast. It's like, whoa, that's a big deal. That's never been done before. And then they were like, we're going to start doing our own original content. And I remember thinking as a kid, that sounds ridiculous. Who's going to watch it? And then their stuff would come out, and you're like, oh, this is amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. It's at a different level. But still, it was like, that was not the norm. The Sopranos, I think, is the one that really kicked that off.
Sure.
But then everyone was just like, but that's an HBO show. They can get away with that. Fast forward a few years, you get Breaking Bad on AMC. Now that's considered the norm. And then if you go a little bit further, you get Netflix. It's like, we can do that too. And so they make their own original programming. And not only are they making their own stuff, but they're making the stuff that's now considered the best television. Orange is the New Black, the Netflix shows, House of Cards. It's all part of, like, now Stranger Things. It's all part of that's among the best TV shows. And so you've got these broadcast stations that are just sort of like, what do we do?
Right. They're trying to play catch up. All right,
yeah. Throw out the next sitcom that no one's going to watch. And even the stations like AMC are probably just sort of like, some of our best stuff is finished.
Yeah, or winding up. I mean, how long can we really keep this Walking Dead thing going?
Exactly. Yeah. And it gets to this point of, you know, what are you going to do? Your back's to the wall. And it makes me wonder what the next step is.
That's a good question. And I don't have an answer. Yeah, everything seems to have like this natural progression, this beginning and then where it's the norm and then it's the end and peters while something else takes over. I don't know. Are we seeing almost kind of this is as far as it can go? I mean, what outside of the internet, things coming to you, to your television, to your computer, to your phone, you know, you can watch something, go, oh, I need to get somewhere. I got to take a bus somewhere. I'll pause it here on my TV, pick it up on your phone and finish watching it. I mean, is there really, can there possibly be anything after that?
I think the thing after that is, I've been saying this for a while. I've been saying this for a few years that you're going to see what we know cable TV to be is going to become obsolete. I think it's going to go away. You're not going to have channel surfing anymore. I think what you're going to see is individual apps for what were the networks, and then it could either be buy the whole network for a flat rate, or buy certain shows for a flat rate, or buy individual episodes for a few cents a piece.
A la carte entertainment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, hey, that used to be CBS, but now it's the CBS app. And so you can either buy the whole thing, or you can just pick the one show you like, or you can just go an episode at a time, and you just have these different options. That's what I think the next step of television will be. And it'll just be like, we'll have mini versions of Netflix popping up.
And that is actually something I wouldn't mind because, I mean, I told you, we get the satellite and we watch a dozen channels out of, you know,
5,000.
Yeah, out of hundreds that are available to us. And regularly we watch maybe a dozen. And all those are done, you know, we record to our DVR and watch when we finally get a chance to watch. Some come off network, you know, some are on CBS, some are on AMC, some are you know, on some other cable channel or whatever. They're all over the board. But yeah, it'd be great if I could just go, I just want to watch that. And it was just known. And it's the price thing that's going to be the big decider. And I think they've learned that, yes, you can try to charge someone $15 or something for, I don't know what Netflix is now, but still like 15, 20 bucks a month.
I think it's a shade under 15. I think that's what I saw on my last bill, like 13.
It used to be as low as 10, but I'm sure it's gone up a little.
Yeah, it went up because I've been using it for a few years, and I remember when they first said, oh, it's going to go up, but if you've been subscribing since before this date, you'll have the price that you had for the next year and a half, and then now it has since caught up, so I'm paying what everyone else is paying. But it's still, I think, less than 15 a month, which for everything they have on there.
Yeah, exactly.
That trumps, you know, cable TV by a lot.
Well, the only thing that – the one thing that you've always – that's always been a detractor from something like a la carte is you typically pay more because you're wanting less. They can't give it to you as a package. You have to break that package. Well, now since everything's digital, they don't need to do that. And they can act – and they know that there's millions of people that will pay 50 cents, $1.99, whatever it is. And so they don't need to say, well, since you only want the one episode, not the whole season or not the whole show, we have to charge you more. They don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
They can still try to sweeten the deal and go, yeah, well, it's going to be $1 for an episode, but we'll give you all 12 for 10. You know, they can sweeten it if they want.
Right.
But I mean, a buck, you know, it's not a big. And when you think about how much we pay for the satellite or the cable, which at minimum is probably $80 for any one for any household,
and it'll go up every year,
and it's going to keep going up. Exactly. I mean, it's pretty easy to see where you can save a lot of money, and then so there's weeks where I just haven't had time to watch anything. Why you don't have to,
right?
You know, as long as you got to pay for your internet bill, that's it.
Exactly. And you know, I know there was this whole I can't remember what it was called, but there's been this stuff going on where cable networks are trying to reduce streaming rates, like reduce the download rates of people who are only streaming. So it's like, hey, if you don't buy a full cable package, they're allowed to slow down. Because they know you're just streaming, and then that keeps getting blocked, and it keeps coming back to the court.
There's some efforts from, I mean, I think even maybe HBO does it too, where you still have to have a cable or a satellite subscription in order to get the stuff. Not anymore. Did they stop that? Okay.
You can. If you have it, then you go to their HBO Go app, and then you just put in your cable information, and then you got it at no extra charge. If you don't have it, you buy what's called HBO Now. And so it's their own version of a Netflix, and it's just, and everything else that they have. You get all whatever movies they're carrying that month, and then you get all their original stuff. And then it's not just their original stuff, it's everything they've put out. I think the last time I checked, and I don't know why this is, and I've like taken to the internet to try to figure it out, the only original program that they don't carry is Arliss, which is one of their first shows.
Uh-huh.
No one has an answer for why that is. I would love to know why that is. That show was really funny.
Yeah, must be something tied up in some rights somewhere. Maybe. Yeah,
who knows? I just think that they have everything else they've ever made, every original movie, every original show. No one can find Arliss.
Okay. Well, I do know that there are some networks that they have the apps, but in order to access a lot of the content on the apps, you have to have a subscription to a satellite or a TV. I think TCM is great. I love TCM for the fact that it's the one of the few places you can get movies without commercials on. But their app says you go to stream something on their app. It's like, okay, plug in your information from your account for your satellite. I think it is the cable and the satellite's last grasp of trying to keep people – to keep it from just going into this a la carte, just get the apps.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing is – I've used some of those apps when I had cable, and it would be things like, you know, download just the Stars app or the Encore app, and you can watch all the movies that we're carrying this month. The apps are terrible. They crash a lot, or you try to create like a watch list and then it doesn't save them, and then you're just like, oh, what did I want to watch? You erased my list. And So they're also going to have to up their game like that, because I think they were just like, yeah, just make some app, just throw it out there real quick, because we're not charging for it. It's technically free, and
right.
we're not getting anything extra. We don't care.
Yeah,
that'll have to be the other way, which means they'll have to put money into it.
Right. Do you think it's going to be something like the Apple TV and that sort of stuff is going to be kind of like the next cable box rather than...
Yeah, I think you'll get some kind of new box in order to keep watching, or you'll have to get a smart TV in order to keep watching these things.
Something that has these apps or is capable of downloading those apps to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right, instead of having a cable box or satellite dish, you're going to have to buy some kind of streaming
box. That's the only thing that I see as being a detractor or something that would keep people away is like, oh, I want to watch this show, and so I have to go to this app. But I want to watch this show, so now I got to go to this app.
Right.
And so that's the only thing I can see is kind of keeping people away. They want to be able to go to something. That same with me. I don't want to have to go to this click here, and then I got to click here, and then I got to click here to watch three different things. I want to be able to go to one place, hit a button, and then, yes, this show.
Which might be part of that next step of, okay, there are all these apps, and you buy your box, and you have your apps downloaded, and you can go into the app,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe you can create some kind of playlist that's back at the main menu of your box, and it's like, hey, follow this show, pull it from this app.
Right, or a mega app that manages all the apps.
Exactly, yeah. And then, yeah, it just streamlines it for you. I mm-hmm. could see that being part of that next step, absolutely.
Now, we did talk, I mean, this original content that's on these streaming services, obviously it's changing the way we're watching television. Do you think that these... for lack of a better term, networks, these streaming services that are providing this, do you think they're kind of changing the way stories are being told? Are they changing the type of stories that are being told that were previously quote-unquote television?
I think it's changing it for the viewer, but I don't necessarily think it's changing it for the people making it. And what I mean by that is, you look at some of the stuff Netflix puts out, and now they put out a whole season immediately, whereas they used to put out like an episode a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I think it has to kind of be a little surreal to be an actor or a director or anything, because it's just like, we worked on that for months, we put it out, and everyone's done with it in a weekend.
Right.
Rather than you're going through it through a season,
mm-hmm.
and you're seeing people go through the journey, and... So I think the storytelling, because you don't have to wait. You're in suspense about how that episode cliffhanger play.
Yeah.
Just get to the next one. And you finish it all. And, you know, you start it on Friday. You go to work Monday and you've seen the whole thing. And you get everybody gets to talk about it. Or you get that one coworker that's like, I only got halfway through it. Don't tell me yet. That's where I think the experience of the story being told has changed. Because now you just see like a mega movie.
Right. Yeah.
That is a TV show. Rather than chapter after chapter.
You know what? It just occurred to me, and what I like is the fact that it boils down to, do we have a good story to tell and an ability to tell that story as well as possible without necessarily worrying about viewer input. I know previously a show would come on, and halfway through the season, turns out this character is so popular, they were going to kill that character off.
That's true.
And they thought, but it turns out he was just really sick, and he's going to stick around for it. You know, so I'm thinking, what was the story? You know, is the story being harmed by you placating the viewers who are saying, oh, we really like this bit, and we don't like that bit, and so now the studios have to keep tweaking the show and keeping someone around or writing people in. Whereas if they do it all at once, they do the 13 episodes and they put it out. And it's like, this is the story we told and you don't like it. It already happened. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that started before, things like Netflix started making their own, because there were shows, especially like back to HBO, they would make their whole season at once, but they would still air it one episode at a time.
Gotcha.
So you'd still be along for the journey. But there are still shows that they film as the season's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're kind of somewhere in between that right now, where we have some shows that do it that way, where it's like, this is the story, take it or leave it. And then
right.
we have others that are kind of trying to keep in their pulse on the fan base. And it's like, that one didn't go over, but this one did. kill them off. No one likes them. And I've been part of shows that have like that, where there's characters who I was really into, but nobody else was. And I'm like, it doesn't look good for so-and-so because everybody online hates them.
Uh-huh. Tell you another thing that's changed a lot. It's been another kind of evolution of the television is the fact that to see a quote-unquote movie star in a series, 20 years ago even, if that happened, that was that star's decline. Yeah. Oh, you know, they're done. They're washed up movie stars, and so now they're doing television. Now it's a just back and forth. You know, oh, yeah, I did a movie, and now I'm going to go do this series. And we did a couple series, and it was great, and I'm going to go back and do the movies, and no one bats an eye.
Right, and that was the next thing I wanted to talk about. That's the other evolution of television, of it used to be you have your TV stars and you have your movie stars, and the movie stars are far superior to your TV stars. You put people who are on TV, either there's someone who's not a movie star yet, or they're not good enough to be in a movie.
Right.
And it was almost second-tier actors, like, mm-hmm. In terms of how people looked at them. You're not really the same kind of actor that's over here at Hollywood. You're just a TV star.
Right.
And I think of people like George Reeve, mm. who made it huge as Superman.
Right.
But he wanted to be a serious actor. He wanted to break into movies, and every time he went for an audition, they were like,
hey, Superman. Yeah.
And he couldn't get a job. Mm-hmm. And that's what TV was. You're just a kid's character. And it's like, right. No, I'm an actor like you. No, you're not. Put on the cape. Things like that.
And my kid's got a birthday party. Could you come by?
Yeah. Yes, I will, because I need the money.
Yeah.
So it's things like that. And, you know, I mean, that's many decades ago. But then the other thing I think about is, and I was not into the show, but I always think about George Clooney on ER. Because I really look at him as kind of that last actor mm-hmm. that we as a society said he's going to be a big movie star.
Sure. Okay.
And then he left the show and he went to Hollywood and he made the transition, and good mm-hmm. for him. Kind of after that, the back and forth started.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of look at, now maybe there are others. I'm sure other people would be like, there was this person and that person. But to me, in terms of like a huge societal thing, he was like that last actor we can remember making that transition,
yeah.
and saying good for him, because he was always going to be a star. And now you just expect anybody can go anywhere.
Right. If you watch some British television, some Britcoms, you see someone like Dame Judi Dench doing mm-hmm. a situation comedy. And this was back when she was, I mean, she's a dame,
right.
You know, and she's this big movie star. She can walk onto a movie for, what was it, like 3 minutes in Shakespeare in Love and walk away with an Oscar. This was was Judi Dench. And then she would go and do this comedy sitcom. And so I think it's something that was fairly common in Europe, that people were just, you're just a star, whether you're on big screen or small screen, doesn't matter. You're just, that's, you know, you're an actor.
You're talented.
You're on stage, you're on screen, you're on the movie screen, you're an actor. And that was it. So I think it's something that's maybe just come into its own here.
Yeah.
Probably within the last decade or so.
Yeah, and you've seen American actors kind of do all three of live stage, Broadway, mm-hmm. and TV and movies. And we expect that now almost. Because you hear about, like, hey, so-and-so is going to be doing Broadway for the next year. And I'm like, really? Well, yeah, I guess it is normal now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I've always said that I feel that especially British actors are always a bit better than American actors. And I think that's why, because they get to move around. They get mm-hmm. to – all right, well, they did years doing live performances. So, you know, one, they can remember their lines and they can – you know, do their job under pressure. They can do a TV series, which means they can really get into a character for long term and keep them interesting. Or they can do a movie and just run it for an hour and a half and keep you, you know, give you a lot in a short amount of time.
And I've actually even heard some interviews from what would be considered, you know, our movie stars that have moved and done some of these series. And they like the fact that it's a chance for them to tell more of a story and actually develop a character through, you know, 13 episodes or 24 episodes, where before it was, I came in, I have to come out and go, hi, I'm this person and I'm this kind of person and I'm going to go do this. And then the movie ends and they have to do it all with, you know, and that movie's an hour and a half or 2 hours long. And that's all they've got to develop that character with. And so I actually like the freedom of being able to come and do a series and and just have that freedom that, that like they can change. They can get this character. They can tell this story and more of a story than they ever could on the big screen.
And that brings up an interesting point of just a couple weeks ago, I was talking to my brother about, you know, movies and TV, because when we decided we were going to do this episode, I was just had a conversation with him. And then he said, so if you had to get rid of one for the rest of your life, movies or television?
Ooh.
And I laughed and I said, you know, if you asked me that 5 years ago, it would have been a different answer. 5 years ago, I would have said get rid of television, which is not a long time ago.
Right.
Even though some great stuff was coming out, but it was still a little bit different. Because I didn't have a Netflix account 5 years ago. I wasn't getting into all the streaming stuff. But now I would probably say I could do without movies.
Really?
Because of that reason, because you can get into so much more. And I feel some of the best acting people are doing and some of the best stories that are being written are because they can really dive into it.
Mm-hmm.
I've said for a while that, you know, whenever they take a novel and turn it into a movie, they shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
A novel should be a TV show.
Yeah,
sure. A
short
story should be a movie. You can add more to it. You can put some more on it. And then I think people are more forgiving of like, you cut that part out. Like, well, we can only put so much in an hour and 45 minutes. And that was a 500-page book.
Yeah.
But you could put a 500-page book into a 20-episode season with, you know, and keep every last detail in. And that's why I would say if I had to cut one, I would cut movies out of my life, even though I love them.
Yeah. I think I might have to agree if they would start, and like you were just saying, if you were going to adapt a book, you can do it. This is something that I think is great, is because if you're developing these short run, these series, which are now, you know, 12, 13 episodes, maybe 20 episodes, whatever. But, and this is another, you know, go back to the British thing. They're not afraid to do this. They have a story. This is their story. It's going to last 24 episodes over the course of two seasons. And then we're going to finish our story and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure to say, oh, but we wanted to come back then. No, we're done. We told our story.
There's a clear end.
There's a clear end. There's a beginning, there's a middle and an end, and there's no wish-wash, you know, in between or anything.
Filler.
Yeah, no filler.
Yeah.
And I love that. And so, yeah, I could give up movies if the studios would go, yes, okay, so that just means we're going to produce five series over the course of this year. And each of those series, that's it. You know, we're going to tell our story. We're going to keep it tight. We're going to keep it, you know, good. And we're going to get to the end and we're going to have a great ending. And then that's it. And there's not going to be any of this.
Oh, we're going to do a sequel.
And then his twin brother shows up to do the next season. What? Who? Yeah. What? Yeah.
Just to keep that actor going. Even
yeah.
A different character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem, because they're just like, well, people want more. And so it's a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to leave people wanting more.
Yeah.
Because that means you ended it well. No one has ever gone, hey, that was a good ending, glad it's over.
Right.
It's never happened. It's that was a great ending, I want more.
Uh-huh.
But you're supposed to. That means it was a good ending.
I think it's 90% of why you still have people today going, when's the second season of Firefly? Because that show had one season.
Yeah, and that really propped it up. If it kept going, people probably would have been like, remember when Firefly was
it
really
It just
good?
Would have been another goofy sci-fi series. Yeah.
Even though, yes, I will admit this, I am in the minority that I didn't like Firefly.
And I think we brought this up. I think we might have mentioned this on previous.
Throw your eggs and tomatoes. It's okay.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this briefly in some previous where I didn't like it at first, and I went back and rewatched it, and actually ended up really enjoying it.
It just didn't pull me in, and I didn't watch it when it first aired. It was somebody saying, "You're sitting down, you're watching this." I got halfway through the first season, and I went, "Can we stop?"
I want to do that to my wife, actually.
And then they made me watch the movie, and I was like, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think it's bad. It just it didn't do it for me.
Gotcha.
I'm not one of those people that goes, it's awful, it's terrible, you know, only stupid people like it. I'm just going, it's not for me.
Right.
You like it? Good for you.
Well, I loved it. I ended up really enjoying it, and then I really enjoyed the movie. But I've figured, you know, that was it. That was its little time. That was it. I'm not clamoring for them to bring it back or anything.
A lot of other people are.
A lot of other people are, but I'm not in the camp of bringing it back. Now, a series that kind of plays both sides of this fence, I think, and is a good example, even if some of the series have been less than great, is American Horror Story. They can both have the series, they can have the same actors, but they tell different stories every season. The anthology series.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that is something with the right people behind it. I think it's a brilliant idea.
I think it's incredibly difficult to do.
Yes.
That's the hard part.
Which is why some of their series have been less than right. others.
And HBO tried it with True Detective. The first season was fantastic. It was mm-hmm. It was, again, just HBO doing that movie quality level. I didn't watch the second season because everyone I know who did said, don't watch it. It's so bad. And the thing is, actually, they did different actors.
Mm.
I wonder if that plays into it. If they kept Matthew McConaughey and help me out.
I don't know. I had to dig up my phone and do it. Yeah.
He was on Cheers. He replaced Kurt.
Oh, Woody Harrelson.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
But, see, Cheers. I knew Cheers.
Right. I was like, how can I 6 degrees this? So maybe if they kept those two, because that's what a lot of people, that's what I thought, a lot of the charm and the heart was in their acting and their dynamic with each other. But, you know, American Horror Story, the cast has remained relatively unchanged. There was the guy in it who was in the first season who didn't come back, but everybody else did.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said for that. But what makes it difficult is, all right, you all just spent a year getting in the minds of these characters. Throw it away.
Something new.
You're all still going to work with each other. We're still going to be working on the same show. But you have to now create an entirely different personality.
Mm-hmm.
That must, on one hand, be really fulfilling as an actor.
Right.
Because, one, I got steady work. But I get to do something different every year.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I've got to recreate everything for the same job.
It's got to be kind of a hybrid of the movie actor and the television actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder, when we were talking about what is the future of television, it makes me, because we've said like actors go back and forth and the quality of TV has gone up. Viewership for movies is going lower and lower every year, how one is affecting the other.
Mm.
And if movies will still be made, but kind of for a streaming service.
Yeah. Is the movie theater the next Blockbuster? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
The next staple to disappear.
Exactly. And we'll still have movies. We'll still have Hollywood. We'll be still churning out, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour, 2.5 hour movies. We'll still have superhero movies. Don't worry. They won't go anywhere, people. No matter how much they're kind of getting a little repetitive.
Yeah.
But you won't go to the theater. You'll just mm-hmm. have, you know, the Warner Brothers app, the Fox app, the mm-hmm. the Lionsgate app and things like that. And if that's what movies will become, or if movies will kind of take from the whole anthology thing of, we'll just keep, you know, because you can kind of argue that Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio have been the anthology movie tellers the last 10 years. Same two guys, entirely different thing every 3 years.
Yeah. Tim Burton, Johnny Depp.
Yeah, exactly. They've been doing it this whole time. We just didn't pay attention.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I have anything else. Did you think of any other points? Yeah.
It's so funny that we decided to do this, and then days later, this article comes out on IGN talking about how the Piper Jaffray, they do a report every so often to get the statistics on a lot of things, but one is television. And so they surveyed 10,000 teenagers, and they asked the question, you know, of these things, what do you watch daily?
Hmm.
And it was cable TV, it was Netflix, and it was YouTube. Netflix reigns supreme.
Wow.
37% of teenagers watch it daily.
Hmm.
For the first time ever, YouTube has passed cable TV.
Wow. Oh, interesting.
By 1%. It was 26% for YouTube, 25% for cable TV.
I'll actually admit to being a little surprised that YouTube didn't surpass Netflix, that Netflix still was that high.
And I wonder if maybe in the question there was some wording of like, what does daily mean? Does daily mean, oh, look at the cat video? Or does it mean, because now people are making shows, people are making live programming. You can stream live. I do some live streaming on YouTube. But then there's other people who are actually making TV quality stuff. And it's like every week we're going to put out another episode, and people tune into that, and they watch it when it gets aired, or they watch it when it goes live. And that's become a new form of screen media. And I wonder if that's what they meant. It's like, no, sure. It's not about the next viral video, but like, what are you actually watching as a program?
Gotcha. Okay.
That's just me taking a guess.
That would make a little bit more sense to me, I think.
But it's funny to me because I remember it was because YouTube came out, and it was just sort of everybody took all of the videos that was on stupidvideos.com
right.
and moved them over to YouTube. Like, hey, remember that one where the guy fell off the bike? That's on YouTube now.
Yeah.
And then it was just sort of like, okay. And then all of a sudden YouTube became this place to put up 30-second clips illegally from a TV show. And I remember going, how do they do that? Because it's not like recorded off of a camcorder. It's like it's the show.
Right.
That's impressive. And then YouTube came up with the feature of you don't have to like load the whole video. You can click halfway in and it'll start loading from there. And I remember that was a big deal because it used to be you hit play and you had to wait for the load bar to get
all the way over. Yeah. Play, then pause and wait for it to...
Yes. And it's like you still see that little sliver of video and you see the circle catching up and you're like, come on.
Oh, come on,
you
more.
Can make it. But then all of a sudden people were like, I'm going to create my own channel and I'm not just going to upload junk that's been around for 10 years. I'm going to record something original.
My own original content.
Right. And it became interesting. Some people were doing comedy stuff. Some people were doing, like, people were doing, like, their own news channel where they were just taking stuff from the headlines and they made their own graphic and the person was in a suit. And it's just like, is this from a news station? This is a guy in his basement.
Yeah.
This is just someone who's doing it. And it was good. And then someone was like, we can make characters. We do Let's Plays. And we do, and now there's that whole thing. I don't know if you know about this. Little kids love these unboxing videos.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, I got, you know, the collector's edition of something.
It can be anything. Yeah.
It's a little toy out of a plastic bag and they unwrap them for like half an hour. They get like 50 of them and they show it and like, oh, it's this one. And they set it down on a little plastic stage. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, the whole set is done. And I'm just sitting there going, okay. This is a thing now.
I'm waiting for the joke. When does the cat come in and eat it?
It doesn't. It's and kids love it. I mean, where I work, we will use videos to help distract kids at the hospitals from things going on that might be painful for them. And more younger kids in the age range of like 6 and under are saying that's what they want to watch.
Unboxing
videos of just like, oh, I got my Shopkins and I'm going to open that. And I'm like, this is original content now.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's being watched. Instead of cable television.
Wow.
And that's the shit. And like, you know what? No studio can compete with that.
Nope.
Because you're not going to make a TV show. Maybe they will. Maybe you would see Nickelodeon or Nick Jr. will be like, it's the unboxing show.
It's the obvious sequel to all the Home Shopping Network.
Yeah, for kids. And they're unboxing their own figures. And instead of commercials, we're just going to do a 30-minute show of, you know, we're going to show you all the SpongeBob toys you can get. So maybe they can do that, but I don't think kids would watch it. I think they'd be like, no, I want to go on my tablet and pick the one I want.
Yeah, we kind of skipped right over the whole, you know, along with the internet and the ability to the YouTube, you know, the ability for people, digital cameras, to do their own videos, upload their videos. Yeah. We completely skipped over the idea of the internet star. I mean, there are people that have careers that were born out of just uploading videos to YouTube.
Yeah, and they're getting paid to do it now.
Yeah.
There was this one guy, he does... He's really into playing Grand Theft Auto Online, and that's a game that, even though it's a few years old, still keeps releasing new content. So he buys, like, you can use real money to buy in-game money. So the stuff to buy in the game is expensive. So he spends $100. He gets $8 million in-game. He buys all the new stuff just to show it to you the day it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But because so many people are watching his videos, he's getting money. So it's like he's getting paid to take that money and put it back into the game. Like, it's this brilliant cycle that goes round and around, and that's part of screen media now. That's what people are watching. It has millions of views in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's paying for itself.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. I'm sitting there waiting. I think of that. Yeah.
We're all waiting to figure out that one thing. What can I put up on video on YouTube that's going to make me a star or going to make me rich?
Right. And and it funds itself. And at the end of the day, it's just a kid playing a video game, but it's funding itself. And it's kind of amazing.
I think we are in store for some amazing things, some amazing developments in the future. I think some of it is predicted and it is easily predictable, but I'm sure there's probably something that's just on the outside that no one has ever thought of that is just going to come and take the whole, you know, technology or the type of show. Something is going to come and just surprise everybody and change everything again. You know, from you had to go to the movies to the VHS tape to the DVD now to the streaming, it's all going to change somewhere down the line. It's going to change yet one more time at least.
And I think a lot of it is happy accidents in a way.
Sure.
I mean, we were last talking about Inc.
Mm-hmm.
and how they made their movie and nobody watched it.
Someone stole it.
They put it up. Everyone downloaded it illegally. And then it was bought legit.
Uh-huh.
And they got real popular that way. That's a happy accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like these unboxing videos. There's no way somebody said, I know it's a brilliant moneymaker.
Right.
Me, just my hands unwrapping. Like, no, someone just did it. And then somebody else did it. And then it evolved into this thing. All by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube went up. Don't know why they made YouTube. Did somebody come along and said, I can do stupid videos better? No, they just decided to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became, now it's a thing. And now, you know, you put on legit, like, news stations and they're like, and follow us on YouTube.
Yeah.
Here's our Twitter handle. And it's like, nobody planned for this to become as big as it is.
There's legitimate news stations that have people sit around and just read news off the internet.
Right.
They're like, oh, and this story that came up, and so like, wait a minute.
Right. And now those news networks, they're like, well, we're going to go to the video. Well, that video was shot and put on YouTube. You're just showing YouTube. What am I watching you for?
Right.
And it's all an act, and it's just, it's TV as we know it, desperately trying to keep up with the change, because they're going to become obsolete. They know it, but they're just trying to fight it off as best they can. And I think that's what, like, going back, that's what the future is of this TV right here is not going to be what you think it is.
Exactly. Yep.
Hello, everyone. I am Rod Barnett.
I'm Troy Gwynn.
And we are your hosts for NashyCast, the podcast about the films of Paul Nashy. We, for over 5 years, have brought you the joys of Spanish cinema, filtered through our brains to you.
Yes. Now, what is it that qualifies two Southern boys to talk about films that came out of Spain, and I can't think of a single thing.
There's nothing that qualifies.
Nothing. Except that we just love them.
We love them. NashyCast covers the films of Paul Nashy and any other Spanish horror film that we can pretend we know something about.
Yes. If you love beautiful women wearing incredibly short miniskirts in subarctic temperatures chased by werewolves in leisure suits.
If you love werewolves, vampires, unidentifiable beasts, or crazy people driving women around and talking like a maniac to them.
Yes, flying cats, beheadings with axes.
Blood that looks like melted crayons.
Shambling zombies, yeah.
Some of the films that we've covered in the past are Mark of the Werewolf,
Howl of the Devil,
Vengeance of the Zombies,
Horror Rises from the Tomb,
Tombs of the Blind Dead,
Vampire's Night Orgy.
Ooh, yes. Join us on this journey through the golden age of Spanish horror, where Paul Nashy, Leon Klimovsky, Jess Franco, Armando D'Osorio take us through a filter Espanol.
Join us for the Nashy Cast.
Well, I think that is going to do it, Matt. This is the discussion that I think we've been wanting to have for a while. Like I said, it kept coming up with every time we talk about anything. It seems like we kept hitting on this.
I've been wanting to have this conversation with somebody for 3 years.
And I'm sure it's going to come up again in future, just as things progress and things change. And so it's coming. There's more stuff coming. And there will be more Time Shifters coming too, hopefully. Not sure what we're going to discuss next time. We actually, Matt has been just a fantastic idea person here. He's brought a lot of ideas and subjects to the podcast, and his podcast was his recent idea was about doing kind of a group of three as far as our episodes and topics go, where we had a general discussion and then a more maybe focused discussion or something that related for the next two episodes, which I think was a brilliant idea. It worked really well with our movies, which is what sparked the idea for you. So what do you think we could focus in or hone in on from this discussion?
I mean, we can look at one certain TV series, maybe that like one of us watched and the other didn't, or we can just keep it like, I mean, since you love movies and I love movies, we can just be like, hey, have you seen this? No? Well, you're going to watch it for next time. I'm up for whatever, but...
this movie based on a TV series.
Yeah, it could be. You're going to make me watch Firefly, aren't you?
No, I won't do that. You've said your bit.
I'm not sure, but I'm open to anything.
Excellent. Well, we will come up with something good. We'll have something for you in another couple weeks. Thank you very much for listening. Keep downloading, of course, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio is where you can get us. And I'm sure there's plenty of other podcasters out there. And if you can't find us, let me know, and I will make sure that we get on there. If there's one that you use that we don't show up on. Any feedback or anything, timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. That's timeshifters with an S. podcast@gmail.com. I'm looking for people's input on Shin Godzilla. If you got a chance to see it here in the States, they did that limited run, and they extended the run a little bit in some parts of the country. I still, unfortunately, did not get to the theater to see it on the big screen. I did get to see it, as I said, in my little burst I put out a couple weeks ago. But, I've got a couple of people that have sent in their thoughts, and I'd love to hear a couple more. So if you do that, please go ahead and do it sooner rather than later. But that's going to do it for us this time. Matt, thanks very much for joining me again.
Happy to do it.
And we will catch you all next time. Bye, all.
See you.